Welcome to Bina, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who have come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of Bina, we revisit a conversation with television actors, writers, and producers Issa Rae and Justin Simeon from 2015. At the time, Issa Rae had just released her book, The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl, whose title was taken from her highly acclaimed web series. She was also working on her next series, Insecure, whose pilot was picked up by HBO and later premiered in 2016. Justin Simeon wrote, directed, and co-produced the 2014 film, Dear White People. In 2017, Dear White People was adapted into the Netflix series of the same name. Fast forward to the fall of 2021, the fifth and final season of Insecure is now available on HBO. And the fourth and final season of Dear White People is available on Netflix. Joining Issa Rae and Justin Simeon in conversation is Jordan Abel. And now join Jordan Abel on stage at the JCCSF as she introduces our guests.
So Issa Rae's hilarious, unique content has garnered over 20 million views and over 150,000 YouTube subscribers. I'm guessing there's about 400 of those subscribers in the audience tonight. Yeah, that's great. Okay, and in addition to making Glamour Magazine's 35 Under 35 list and Forbes's 30 Under 30 list and winning the Shorty Award for Best Web Series, web show for her hit series, The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl, Issa Rae has worked on web content for Pharrell Williams, Tracy Edmonds, and numerous others. She developed a television series with Shonda Rhimes for ABC and recently was given the green light to shoot and produce the pilot for her half-hour comedy, Insecure, which is so exciting. Her new book, which we're here to celebrate, The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl, has been called Hilarious by Lena Dunham and Brilliant, Funny, and Lovably Awkward by Mindy Kaling. So you should buy at least one copy. Issa is joined in conversation tonight by Justin Simeon. Justin wrote and directed the acclaimed feature film Dear White People and won the Special Jury Award for Breakthrough Talent last year at Sundance. The New York Times' A.O. Scott said, quote, Justin Simeon's first feature film is as smart and fearless a debut as I have seen from an American filmmaker in quite some time. Knowing but not snarky, self-aware but not solipsistic, open to influence and confident in its own originality. Justin is also the author of the book, Dear White People, A Guide to Interracial Harmony in Post-Racial America, a companion to his film. So now let's take a look at some of their work and then we'll hear from the people themselves.
Let me introduce myself. My name is Jay, and I'm awkward and black. Someone once told me those were the two worst things anyone could be. That someone was right. Where do I start? 3 months ago, I shaved my head. My boyfriend, D, the only guy I've ever loved, had just broken up with me.
You know what? I can't do this no more. I can't. I'm not happy. I'm uncomfortable. I don't even think you're happy. I just gotta go.
So I needed a fresh start. And to me, a fresh start meant crying in the mirror, cutting all my hair, getting drunk at the company holiday party, and sleeping with this guy, A, my coworker. 2 days later, D said he wanted to give it another shot.
I gave it some thought, and I want to make this work.
But my new lack of hair made him feel like less of a man, and a week later, he broke up with me.
I feel gay. No homo, but I can't do this no more.
So now, here I am writing violent rap lyrics in my bedroom.
You's a liar. I'll set your face on fire. I don't give a It's too Nicki Minaj.
It's been my secret way of coping with stress since sixth grade. It gets me through my job, my relationships, and my life. It's odd, but what can I say? I'm awkward.
On behalf of all the colored folks in the room, let me apologize to all the better qualified white students whose place we're taking up.
No, it's fine. We're okay.
I'm sorry, did you get lost? Bichet's that way.
Oh, I know where it is. I'm actually supposed to eat there. Yeah, it's just this is the only dining hall that you can actually get yourself some chicken and waffles. Look, you're dear white people, right? It's funny. It's funny stuff. It really is. How have we not staffed you yet?
Oh, me? Oh, what? On Pastiche, your uninspired humor magazine?
It's actually much more than just a magazine, sweetheart. SNL staff is basically half Lampoon, half Pastiche. Same goes for the network comedies.
And what gives you Clubhouse kids the right to come to our dining hall? You don't live here.
Sam, what are you doing?
So you can't eat here.
Chill, Sam. Damn, all right? Let the man eat.
Got this.
Look, who are you to throw me out?
Oh, well, I think I'm head of this house. And I'm doing things my way.
Hello.
Hi. Hello. Hi. Thank you for coming tonight. We're all so excited you're here.
Hello.
Hi. Hey. So let's start. We saw some clips of your work. I'm sure everyone has seen a lot more of your work, but for the few people out there who haven't, can you give us just a brief rundown of kind of your oeuvre?
Yeah.
So far? Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to use that word.
That's a good word.
So I created a series called The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl. It was my third web series. And it follows Jay, the title character, as she navigates love, her job, life, very, very awkwardly. It's just about her inner thoughts and very much her feelings and her relationships. And I just wanted to create a relatable black female character. I just could not find any on television for a while. And I was like, well, this person, I relate to this person, obviously. So maybe my friends and family will too. And then it just kind of exceeded my expectations in terms of the response. So that's one of the things I've worked on, and I've continued on other web series, and I'm now working in television and have a book. Yes. Thank you. All right. Thank you.
If I don't get some I love yous, man.
Rick.
I love you too. I see. I'm obsessed with Michael Jackson, so I've always dreamed of being like, I love you too.
I love you.
Justin, do you want to give us the Justin rundown?
Yeah. So I created a web series called Awkward Black Girl. Like a relatable, like. No, I worked in. I'm sorry. It sounded good.
Yeah, it did. It sounded really good.
I was a publicist for 8 years, but I've always wanted to be a filmmaker. Like, I knew since I was a kid, but we couldn't, like, afford equipment or whatever. So, I went to performing arts school. I did theater. I went to film school and was just sort of like, I found myself doing publicity because it paid the bills. And I would go home at night and I would work on screenplays. And Dear White People was one of three, and it got to a point where, like, it was too painful to go another year not trying to get the movie made. So I started a Twitter account to sort of called at Dear White People to better test the jokes. I used my tax refund to make a concept trailer. And that went viral. That also exceeded my expectations. And I was like, oh my God, this went viral. I'm gonna quit my job and make this movie. And I did. And a year and a half later, we actually got the movie made. And just when I was on the brink of eviction. And and we went to Sundance with the film, and it was released, and you can buy it now. And I also got to write a book.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Both, just as a reminder, are for sale here tonight.
Yes, they are, or else I can't actually get home. So, please buy it.
So, serious?
Isa, Justin mentioned that he knew he wanted to be a filmmaker from a young age. Did you also sort of have this ambition from when you were a child? Or?
I knew that I wanted to be a writer. I was writing stories at a very young age when I was like five or six. My mom had like a Tina Turner wig that was purple and pink, and I used to wear it, and I used to wear white, and I transformed into Cool Girl. Mm-hmm. Say it at the same time. Cool Girl.
Cool Girl.
No, that's... Cool. And that was stupid. You actually tried it. but yeah, that...
Cool
I used
Girl.
To write... I used to write stories about... Okay.
I'm done.
I used to write stories about Cool Girl and her adventures. And oddly enough, I guess when I got older, I lost confidence and Awkward Black Girl came about. But Cool Girl was just
from
the
cool
first
to awkward.
Just
okay.
awkward.
I like that. I like that.
But I knew that I wanted to pursue writing. And then I got hit by the acting bug in elementary school. They cast me as... Demetrius in A Midsummer Night's Dream,
which is a
boy's role, but I really loved it. And the teachers really validated me because they were like, oh my gosh, you did such a great job. You should consider this. And I did. And so I just caught that. I started writing plays. And then in high school, I was in all the plays. And then by the time I got to college, the drama department was kind of limited in terms of the productions they put on. And so I was like, I want to make my own plays. And so I adapted Spike Lee's School Days, which I know you were
influenced
by. And
yes, adaptation of School Days.
I did because of Netflix. I just re-seen it, and the good and bad hair scene just like
I was like,
man, this is amazing.
So good.
And it seemed like it should be a musical,
right.
So we made it a musical. Obviously, clearly, I know that was funny. And then just kept on being behind the scenes and loved that process. And ultimately just decided I wanted to pursue writing and producing and directing, whatever it was, full time.
And was it an easy, financially successful journey to do that opposite
always.
Of Justin's experience?
Always. I was just bawling out.
So much money.
Constantly. Yeah. But no.
Being an artist is super lucrative,
it's
right?
Why doesn't everybody just do it?
It's so weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you just like fill out a form online, artist.gov, and they just start sending you checks. It's really great. Like
yeah.
You guys should try it.
I don't know why it took so long. But it was absolutely bumpy and so broke. The brokenness only recently stopped. Like, it's just, don't do it. Don't ever
do it. Don't follow your dreams.
Yeah, don't waste your time or your money. And, you know, my parents were concerned, absolutely, just because when they send you out there, they hope that you're going to come back with money, and I just didn't do that.
And how do they feel now?
My mom is happy and my dad is happy. I'm not asking him for money. He doesn't know my profession. He doesn't understand what I do, but he's just like, you're not asking me for money? Good. Okay. Yeah.
And Justin, how has your family been throughout the process?
They've been like, once the trailer hit, my mom finally got it. But up until that point, it was like, you know, baby, you could come back home. You know, and I was like, there's not really a film industry in Houston, but I appreciate that.
Beyonce is from Houston.
She's from Houston.
Okay.
Okay. So am I, but she did not make her fortune in Houston. The point is that it took a while. I mean, that's why, you know, I was doing the publicity thing because it was a 9-to-5 stable job that I was pretty good at. And I could keep fooling people to, like, you know, give me promotions and stuff. And that's why I did it. But yeah, I mean, it was bumpy, as to quote Issa Rae. It was, because I mean, for me, for Dear White People, I mean, in particular, like when the trailer went viral, I was just really feeling myself, like I was. And we had a big studio that was like, we're gonna make this movie. They made like, you know, a 7-figure offer, and I was like, amazing. And I didn't realize at the time that when a studio makes an offer, like there's like this period of time where they like anyone can sort of like renege. And so, like 6 months was later, six months went by, and I'm sitting there sort of like working on a draft of the screenplay, literally. And I got a call saying that they had decided to pass after 6 months. And I've spent all of the money that I had. So You know, so yeah, so like it really, for me, it was down to the wire of like, you know, I might have to like pack up and go back home. But it eventually worked out. But for me, you know, I don't know if you guys know this, but independent filmmaking doesn't necessarily pay very well.
It's not like an artist.
What's
that? It's different from being an artist.
Yeah. You know, my artist.gov application. No, that's all, by the way, that's called unemployment. And that only works. That only works for a certain amount of time. It actually doesn't work if you quit your job. So, you know, if you want to be an artist, try to get fired. That actually is much more helpful.
Taking that path.
When it comes to file for unemployment. But yeah, I mean, it was tricky. I don't know. It was tricky. It was hard.
I don't know how you still, like, you were successful as a publicist.
Mm.
And you had three scripts. I don't know how you did that, because having a 9-to-5 is absolutely exhausting.
Yeah.
To begin with. And I feel like the creativity is just drained by the time you get home.
It's totally drained. But you know what, though? It was like, at a certain point, like after 8 years, it was like one of these is harder than the other.
Mm-hmm.
Like not taking a step forward, like that was harder than like making myself stay up a couple more hours to like crank out a scene, you know, for the screenplay. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the first drafts are always like, just know that and accept it, because like you sort of give yourself permission to just sit it. It gave me permission to sit in front of my laptop and write just garbage, like page after page of garbage. But that's a part of the process.
Absolutely.
You know, and for me, it just got too hard not doing it.
When did you know to quit? Sorry to take you. I just want to know.
Yeah, you can go. You can go.
Sorry.
It's just gonna be us now. You know, it was one of those step out on faith kind of moments. You know what I mean? It really was. And you know what did is, when I was talking to my mother, who is always very like sort of conservative about this sort of thing, she's been the person that's drilled into me to like get that 9-to-5, baby, and get your benefits, and you can do what you love when you retire. You know, that's been like. It was when that woman was like, well, you know what? I think you got to go for it, baby.
Aww,
it's when she made that change is really when I like felt like I had to do it. Because it was the point where the trailer was doing well. I was like on CNN. I had to sneak out of my job to like take meetings everywhere. And like literally it was like, hey, I'm going for a lunch, and wouldn't come back for several hours. But like... But, like, I literally, you know, I was like, this is, like, I think I'm at the place now where I just need to give this all of my energy. And I don't know how I'm going to make it if this deal doesn't come together. But I talked to my mom, and she completely did a 180. And that's really, for me, when I knew that was the only choice I had. And it was a hellish year and a half after that point. But that's absolutely.
Well, we actually brought your mom out. Mama,
great. Well,
your mom's sorry.
You didn't bring her? Issa.
We have your boyfriend Rick in the audience.
Issa, how could you?
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
I love my mother.
I know. You just saw her.
I did, I just saw her. She's fine. She's fine.
Issa, were you working other jobs while writing or as well?
I was. I worked at an African-American museum for a while. That was somebody else.
Yes, knowledge.
Was doing that. So there.
Someone over here is doing it.
Is a co-presenter of tonight's.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Well, okay.
Issa really enjoyed her time there.
I really loved it.
She supports African American history. Right?
I do.
Okay.
I have to.
Well, you're a professional black person now.
I am a professional black person.
You're
for
professional.
Sure. And then after that, I transitioned to the March of Dimes. I was helping babies, so I.
Okay. All right. So your life was a little more altruistic than mine.
Yeah, but the babies did not need me.
That's what,
like,
I
was like, they're fine. They were fine without me.
The kids didn't need you? I don't believe that.
The kids did not need me at all. It was just me, like, making presentations to people who were already giving money to them.
Mm.
And, you know, it was just frustrating, and it was draining at the time. And I didn't really. Now I sound like an for not wanting to help babies, but I was just like, this is not what I'm passionate about doing at the end of the day.
You're not passionate about babies, helping
babies.
There
were people doing my job better. Like, I was half-assing it, so now someone has my job that's doing a better job. But I wanted to be a creator, and it was just...
Was this during...
Off the Black Girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, during the first 6 months. And then I got... And, you know, I had a great boss, actually, but it's just when you don't love what you're doing, it yeah. just shows. Mm-hmm. And
you're just leaving kids around the corner. Not feeding them.
This is Bina, KALW's series featuring artists and thinkers who have spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's guests are television actors, writers, and producers Issa Rae and Justin Simeon. The fifth and final season of Issa Rae's Insecure is now available on HBO. And the fourth and final season of Justin Simeon's Dear White People is available on Netflix. The conversation was recorded in 2015, before the debut of either series, and Issa Rae and Justin Simeon were joined by Jordan Abel. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
No, wait, I have a question for you. Okay, so when I discovered... I'm sorry. When I discovered... When I discovered Awkward Black Girl, it was like already like this runaway like sensation. How long did it take for that to happen?
It built over time. Each episode that we released, because we released it once a month, uh-huh. you know, it started growing with each audience. Yeah. I mean, with each episode. And so around the fourth or fifth episode, that's when, oddly enough, Hannibal Buress hit me up and he was like, "Hey, I just saw your show. And my managers represent Amy Poehler and Donald Glover. Do you want me to introduce you to them?" And I was like, "Nigga, yes, please. Yes." And so he did that. And at that time, in my naive mind, I was like,
yes!
I'm on. So bye, job.
It's the professionalism.
I left, and that was another bumpy road because I was broke immediately after, and I didn't understand that just because you have a manager and an agent doesn't mean that money just rains.
let me tell you something. Because when I got my first check from WME, I was like, how much went to who? Okay. Okay, anyway, sorry.
No,
I digress. Absolutely.
So it was, I mean, that really helped. I think ultimately, like, the show started, you know, expanding and things, but I didn't have any money to fund it. And right. The Kickstarter is what really, really helped.
That's what, like, came in.
People like you. Yeah. And then blogs picked it up. You know, we nearly doubled our goal, and things just went sort of
upward.
That's
when it really sort of, like, exploded. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So was it strategy on your part, or was it just taking the next step? Because people will ask me, like, well, what's your strategy? How do I do it? And honestly, for me, it was just like, I totally just Oprah'd you right now. I totally just made this about me. I'm so sorry. This is coming from someone who loves Oprah, but...
Say that. Qualify it.
Qualify it, because... Oprah, I need you to present my next film. The point is that... People will ask, like, you know, strategically, how do I do it? It's like, honestly, I was just doing, like, one of the three options available to me. It was like, mm-hmm. do nothing or do this.
Right.
Is I mean, that for you? Or
for me, it was just I put it out there, mm-hmm. and that was the first step. I was like, ooh, it's out there, finally. And then the response, you know, that people wanted to see more made me, like, spring into action.
Yeah.
And that was a great thing, but it was also detrimental in that I wasn't prepared to be successful, and that's a huge thing. And I made sure every other project, I'm like, I'm ready. And then, you know, it either works or it doesn't.
Right,
but that
right.
was, you know, getting a team together, figuring out the next steps. Like, luckily, like, things sort of fell into place with a lot of the people that I worked with.
Yeah.
But that's something that I'll always think about, you know, in the future. Because strategizing is kind of important. It's not enough to just do it anymore and to put it out there and be done. You have to have some sort of plan in place,
yeah.
even if it's just baby steps, you know?
Yeah, sure.
You both have this intense creative drive, right? You're writing and you've got your vision, but you also had these skills. You were a publicist for 8 years. You were doing fundraising, and it seems like those things were pretty...
She was helping babies, actually.
Kind of. Kind of helping.
Sort of helping them.
These things, I'm guessing these skills were very important and helpful in actually getting your work out there and in building what you built. I mean, how much is just
you being able to be creative and write at the beginning, and how much of it was really using your skills from being a publicist and using those, you know, the Kickstarter and things like that. I mean,
you go first because my skills were barely there.
No, I don't.
You were a publicist.
I don't receive that.
No, you had tons of, like, you tapped, you said it before.
Oh my God, you're so sweet.
You're welcome.
You're sweet.
No, you had tons of contacts. You were like, I blasted this out to everyone I knew. I wasn't on the list. You didn't know me, so that's fine. I found it out.
Wow.
But,
okay.
Please.
Yeah, I mean, I just donated to your Kickstarter. It's fine.
Really? Thank you.
Wait, what was the question? I'm sorry.
So
how did the skills help?
The question is really, like, how much of it is being super good at what you do and being creative versus needing this other stuff?
I absolutely think it's both, because the thing is that, like, you know, people could have shown up to my movie and thought this was some you know what I mean? And maybe some did. I don't know. But, like, you know, I really had to have both. The thing is that the publicist skills really helped me, because nobody was checking for, like, a multi-protagonist rumination on Black Identity. Like, no one's looking. In case you're wondering, like, no one's looking for that movie. So, you know what I mean? So, like, there was no traditional route for me to get the movie made. Like, I couldn't just march into a film executive's office, have them read the movie, even if they liked the movie, and get it made. We had, like, millions of, like, fans, and we still couldn't get it made at a studio. So, like, for me, it was about, like, having to make a way. And because I had that skill set of knowing, you know what? You actually can just take things right to the people, and you can sort of, like, build a buzz. And just knowing that intuitively, because that's what I was doing every day, that really helped me get this product out there. But there had to be a product first. And that product took, you know, some 6-7 years to get to the place where it was ready to go out. So for me, it was definitely, like, you know, it was both. But it was certainly helpful, because we couldn't go through the gate. We had to go around the gate. We had to dig under the gate. You know what I mean? And the reason we eventually got financing is because the first financier who passed on the project, the very first person who read it and passed on it, looked back a year and a half later and was like, you know what? You guys have quadrupled your fan base, and there's not even a movie for them to see yet. You just got, like, a concept trailer and some, like, videos about y'all trying to make the movie. And that's how we got financed. I had to literally, like, prove that there was anyone besides myself and my mama that wanted to see the movie get made. So it was, for me, it was both. It was both.
I mean, I think mine just came from a combination of, I mean, putting my procrastination hobby to good use. Like, I was constantly on Facebook, I was constantly on YouTube, I was engaging and building an audience without knowing it initially, just from enjoying social media.
Oh my God, this is segueing into my favorite question.
Oh gosh, here you go. But I just loved putting content out there and getting a response and that instant feedback, and I tried to break in traditionally, and I was just constantly being told, no, there's not an audience for this. You know, try to make it, in some cases, whiter, and it was frustrating. And so having access to the audience, you know, I created my first web series in college, and it was called Dorm Diaries. It was about being Black at Stanford, and seeing the response, not only on campus, but across campuses, that really, like, stuck with me. And so I knew that I wanted to continue to take that route, and ultimately, like, I kept on creating, I took several hiatuses, but when I decided to finally do it and create a second web series, I decided to treat my hobby like my job, as opposed to treating my job like my job. And that I would, you know, produce content consistently. I was like, this is going to be a real TV show, even though it's online. I'm going to have, you know, we have about 2,000 to 3,000 viewers, but those viewers are awesome and they matter. And we're going to release the content every Monday at 10 a.m. And we're going to spend that day. We're going to meet at my apartment and we're going to promote it for like 3 hours. And we're going to reach out to bloggers. We're going to look at the analytics. We're going to see who the demographic is. And we're just going to push this. And I learned so much from doing that second web series that by the time I got to Awkward Black Girl, I'd learned from so many mistakes that I was like, okay, now I'm going to apply these mistakes and try to do it the right way for this. And I mean, even if Awkward Black Girl doesn't work, I'm still going to continue. Still going to continue until I know that I hit the mark. And, you know, I got lucky that the third one was, you know, what people liked it. And that was really, really validating in a sense. And that's when I felt like, okay, my procrastination actually did something good for once.
We will get back to Justin's favorite question, but I just want to take this moment. You were talking about digging under the gate, going around the gate, and you also, and I want to hear a little bit about your new projects that are helping, I don't know, build a new gate or getting other people through the gate.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. There's new gate?
Just stomp down the
side gate.
Side gate.
Black people come in this gate? I don't know. I was trying to come up with like a name for the gate.
It sounds like a scandal. Side gate. Side chicks.
Oh. It is a scandal hashtag. I like it.
Hashtag side gate.
All right.
Sorry, what was the question?
Again.
I'm sorry.
How you're helping build a new gate or get other, helping other people get through.
Issa's drunk, guys. It's not me.
I had sips.
You're not. I'm sorry.
Well, as far as the gate is concerned,
I'm sorry.
how we're helping other people kind of get around it. Like, I know that I'm collaborating with other content creators just via my YouTube channel, just because I'm genuinely a fan and because I genuinely love content of color. And what is great, why do it alone and start from nothing? I'd rather people have sort of a platform to start with and grow on their own. So I'm very friendly in that regard. And then just on the television side, I have an initiative called Color Creative, where we're helping writers of color and women create and produce pilots, and we're giving them attention. We're fully funding them and getting an audience around them and taking them to networks and being like, here's this brilliant writer. You can see their work. You can see the audience respond. Now buy it. And that's an initiative. We're in our second cycle, and we're really excited. And we're looking for extra funding, cough, cough, if y'all are interested. And, I mean, I just think that that's really important. I'm super just big on collaboration, and I feel like the more we support one another, the higher chance we have of succeeding and knocking down barriers and saying, look, we're here, and this is what we want to see. The audience really is dictating content right now in a way that they never have before, and it's just super, super exciting to be a part of that.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Do you feel like the studios are more receptive, moderately more receptive now than they were when you were first...
Yeah, because they see tweets and they see dollar signs. They see that, like, this is some, like, people of color are a force to be reckoned with. Black people on Twitter, Thursday night, there was just an article that came out that was, you know, talking about how Thursday night is just the highest social media night. And Shonda did that, you know? And, like, you know, I think studio executives aren't necessarily thinking, oh, this is diversity at its best. We need to exploit diverse experiences. Nobody's thinking that. They're like, dang, that is money. How do we get the next, how do we get that? And it's not, it doesn't come from a place of genuine concern and genuine progress. They don't care. And they won't care until there are more executives, diverse executives, making those final decisions. And so, like, my thing is, be a writer, be a producer, all that, but also encourage your kids to, like, aim for positions of power. That is so important, because they can give us the money. They can fund this, and they can give other filmmakers the money. That's the most important thing ever.
I need some money.
Yeah, that's real.
So, I'm for it. You know what? I'm not really doing anything for the children or anybody else.
Shut up. You're inspiring generations. You're a new Spike Lee.
You know, my movie just came out. I didn't have time to do the color coordinated
initiative. Creative.
No, I'm playing. First of all, I got to do one of your table reads. It was amazing.
And we're trying to get you to be a director.
I'm dead.
Justin,
cool.
Will you be a director on Issa's color?
I would love to do. Okay. I want to do.
Recording this. Somebody this is basically like signing.
I want to direct the color coordinated.
Yeah.
I want to do it. First of all, I mean, for me, it's about, like, knocking down the illusion that there's even a gate. I mean, truthfully, because the thing is that, like, I love whoever is yesing. You're giving me my life. No!
Yes.
Don't stop. Let me tell you.
Yes.
Yeah. Being on a... Let me tell you what makes being on a stage talking about stuff so much easier is somebody going, thank you. You're amazing. I don't remember what I was talking about. But, like, it really, it is, it's about, like, because for me, it was, you're so under the assumption that you, like, need somebody else to tell you yes to get the thing done. You know what I mean?
Church.
No, but it's so true. And yes, like film and storytelling, it is a collaborative process. You do, technically speaking, need other people. You need financing, all that kind of stuff. But like the thing that like gets people excited to give you money in the first place is feeling like they're jumping on a train that's already moving. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to feel like they're starting the train. Nobody wants to be the one hiking the train up the hill. You know what I mean? And for me, like every time I got told no, you know, from some entity of power with Dear White People, it was really like a lesson from the universe. Yes, I'm going to get a little crunchy granola with y'all. I'm sorry. But like, it was a lesson that like, why am I giving my power up to like these, you know, white men, you know, white men in power. Like, I've got like, I can make this, I'm going by hook or by crook, I'm going to get this thing made. Like, we're going to do it, you know? And that's really, you know, when people come up and they ask you, like, well, how do I do it? And can you help me? And can this person help? It's like, get out of that mentality. Yeah. Like, yeah. Nobody, like, listen, if you don't see your story in the culture, mm-hmm. you have to make it your business to put your story in the culture. Real. We need to see the world from your point of view. And I can't help you do that better than you can.
Right.
I really can't. I mean, we're in America. Like, anybody can upload something to YouTube. And I know that's very, you know, simplistic, but it's true. That's true. All I did. And that's all you did. Like, mm-hmm. that's how it started. So, anyway, so for me, it's really just about saying, like, you got to get out of that illusion. You got to get out of that mindset. And I think, like, for me, being myself, like, being unabashedly myself and telling the stories that I want to tell, regardless of what stories people want me to tell, I think is my own sort of way of kind of burning a path. Because, like, yeah! You know, okay. You know what I mean? Like, I think that, like, the fact that Dear White People made money will help the next Dear White People get made.
Yeah.
True, real talk, you know what I mean? So, like, because you're right, that's all they really care about is the nickels and dimes. Mm-hmm. And the reason it was hard for me to get my movie made at a studio is because there was nothing like it in the past year.
Right.
Now there was. So,
amen. Yeah.
So, are there up-and-coming writers, producers, web series that you want to give a shout-out to, maybe recommend to the crowd to be on the lookout for?
My favorite web series in the entire world is Got to Be Real, the Diva Variety
Show. Oh, my God!
For those who don't know,
Got to Be Real is amazing.
So it's created by a young lady, Patty LaHale. Yeah, I always thought it was a gay man, but it is a young lady.
It's a woman?
It's a woman.
It's a biological woman?
Yes. Genius. Patty LaHale, and what she does is she...
Patty LaHale is a woman.
The Diva Variety Show, she takes people like Aretha Franklin, Rihanna, Beyonce, any diva, Mariah Carey,
is she
in
LA?
Dubs their voices and makes them have this sort of... yes, conflict against one another, but it's the most hilarious. It sounds so simple when I'm saying it, but you have to watch it because her shade is the best
shade
in the entire
world. Oh my God.
Like the portables for days.
It is a masterclass in shade. Because she makes it like they all live in a house. So she cuts it like Real Housewives.
Yes, yes, yes.
But it's just like, it's like clips from different, it's amazing.
It's genius.
Can we open up the curtain and watch? Is my mom coming out? Wait, can you introduce me to her?
Via Twitter, I could be like, hey, this is my homeboy.
I think
I'm obsessed with Got to Be Real.
Directing her an episode.
I don't need, Got to Be Real
so
is...
So that's in the introduction.
I don't need to direct anything. Like that, she is amazing. That show is amazing.
She's amazing. So that, for sure, we can shout her out.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to shout out my homegirl, Lena Wade.
Oh, all day.
You know, Hillman grad, in case you don't know, just named an Instagram It Girl and Variety's 10 Comics to Watch.
Yes.
And she was a producer on Dear White People. She's also an amazing writer. And I mean, you know, she's basically going to have a night on some network very, very soon. And she's just awesome. And you're gonna see. She was on actually the comeback. I don't know if you.
I saw that. I was just binge watching the series, and then all of a sudden I look up on Instagram and I see her face, and I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you did that.
She does it. But we did a show. You can YouTube. You can smartphone your way to something called Twenties, which is a. You know, we kind of took. Yeah, someone knows who that is. Okay. So Twenties is basically like in the same way that I made a concept trailer for Dear White People, we made sort of like a concept pilot for her television show, 20s, and we shot like scenes from the pilot. So you can find that on YouTube, and she's just really great.
That's really, really well done.
I can't wait for her to, you know, be a huge star.
This is Bina, KALW series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's guests are television actors, writers, and producers Issa Rae and Justin Simeon. The fifth and final season of Issa Rae's Insecure is now available on HBO. And the fourth and final season of Justin Simeon's Dear White People is available on Netflix. The conversation was recorded in 2015, before the debut of either series, and Issa Rae and Justin Simeon were joined by Jordan Abel. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
So, in doing a little bit of research for this program here tonight, I learned that Justin and Issa have very different approaches when it comes to reading fan commentary. Issa reads, and I like almost every comment on YouTube, which is terrifying for me to think about, but exciting.
Applaud it.
And Justin does not even read all of his reviews that are published in newspapers.
I can't.
So I just want to hear. I want to hear you, sort of your reasoning for doing those things. And
first of all, I think Issa is insane.
No, I think you're burnt out. I think you're crazy for not reading the comments. There's so much gold in the comments,
girl.
There really is. There's a lot of gold. And then just when I'm feeling like really good about myself, it humbles me too. Like, and I think that's important. It's really, really important. And it's like that's your direct access to the
people.
Here's
the deal. It's not like I don't read anything. I skim. But I don't know if you've been to a Dear White People comment section recently.
And it is the most racist, absurd ever. And you should, that shouldn't even hurt your feelings because those people are idiots. And you should just really, really find,
Let me tell you what's up. Okay. So the first, we started like sending Dear White People out for coverage, right? And like it was a Twitter account. So I was getting like the good and the bad and the ugly. I was getting all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And we sent out the script for coverage. And coverage is, you know, when someone's like too busy or important to actually read it. Like there's like a reader that reads it and writes like a report on what they thought of the script. And so, you know, we're getting the coverage back. And this is, oh, that's good. Oh, they like my movie. Okay, they like my script. And this one dude basically wrote this diatribe about how like I'm, you know, the most racist like writer he's ever encountered and how dare I, you know, with my black pride to shove this in the face of white people, whatever. But like his really scathingly negative comments, once I like calmed down and read the reviews for Do the Right Thing when it first came out, which are also horrific and very interesting, you should check that out. You know, I actually incorporated his note, like the things that he said about me, into the screenplay. So like characters in the movie start saying the like literally like line for line some of the stuff that he said, you know. So I feel you. However, with Dear White People, it got to a point where it was just like making me sad about America. Like just straight up, because there were just people who, you know, if someone would tweet me like something crazy and racist, right? I would consider their followers, and if it was above a dozen, of which there were very few, I would respond back just so that we could have like a public dialogue about something, you know, so we could discuss reverse racism, which is a total myth and complete.
No, I can't have a discussion with them. I would rather just read it. And then, oddly enough, sometimes people do just want you to respond. I'll respond once maximum if someone consistently writes, you know, ridiculously stupid remarks. And I'll say, hey, okay, I see you. I'll try to think of something witty to say or smart. And then generally they're like, oh, my God, I didn't know you were going to respond. I love you. But it happens.
I'm so glad that your followers do that, because mine do not. Mine are like, no, but you go home, go back to Africa. You know, so like, I got all the crazy people. Yeah. I know, you should feel bad for me. that's sweet. You guys should go to my IMDb page right now and fight the war for me, because it's intense. It's intense.
It is intense.
I mean, I'll say this. What got me kind of sad about it, and I just talked about this, but, like, the people who never saw the movie, never watched any of the materials, never read the book, just saw the title Dear White People, saw pictures of, like, black people in the movie, and just, like, went off in the comment section about what they assumed the movie was going to be about. And they rated it one star on all my little pages, even though they hadn't seen it. And you know, and that's, like, honestly, it's a lot of folks. Like, and at a certain point, it just made me sad, because I look at, like, you know, there's, like, a line in the movie about how, like, postmodernist art is unacceptable to some people from black artists. Mm-hmm. But look at something like Stuff White People Like, right? Mm-hmm. Same line of jokes. Like, exact same line of humor, but from a white artist. He didn't encounter any of that. You know what I'm saying? And it made me a little sad. It made me a little sad that, like, you know, the title was just, like, a complete stop for some people. When, as an artist and as a film goer and as a person who enjoys and gets, my life is enriched by storytelling, like, the title is always, for me, just like the, it's just the, you know, it's the opening act. It's the sort of, like,
right, absolutely.
You know, it's the, we're getting ready to get into something here. So, I don't know. For my sanity, I had to just, I couldn't get sucked into the rabbit hole.
Your trailer gave racists, like, a Christmas present.
That is brilliant. I want that quote on something.
You won, though.
This trailer gave racists a Christmas present. Issa Rae. I want it.
But you won. Like, you broke the myth that these kind of films don't, you know, sell internationally, that there's no interest. Like, I constantly saw, you know, on the Dear White People page, people wanting it in London and Paris, everywhere. You're going to Paris. Like, so, I mean, you're doing your work to change the world.
I'm excited. And the only thing that you know, makes me believe otherwise is the comics.
It's the same 10 people.
It is. It definitely is. With the same 3 or 4 followers, by the way. Anyway, but that's interesting. You know, I think it'll be a part of my process, but at a certain point, I just get...
aside from racist, because I've had someone, like, handwrite the N-word 60 times on one of my comments, and it didn't hurt until... So the video was, you know, just in the beginning, I had an ad because I love Spider-Man and I love Stan Lee, and I was just telling people to go to this Stan Lee page. So this person wrote the N-word 60 times, and I knew they hand-wrote it because some of them were misspelled, so they didn't copy-paste it.
So they didn't copy-paste.
And I was amused. But then at the end, they wrote, Stan Lee hates and I was like, does he? But I Googled it, and he doesn't have an issue.
He doesn't.
With black people, so.
He doesn't. I've also Googled that.
You've Googled, does Stan Lee
hate...
Well,
you know how Google fills in... You know, when you write in, does Stan Lee... It tends to fill in hate. I guess a lot of people have had this question.
Okay.
But he doesn't. He's really fine.
I was
fond.
Relieved to know that. But aside from that, you do find constructive criticism. Like, have you ever seen a constructive...
Yes.
...comment? Because some people really do genuinely just want you to do better. And when you can dig through and find that, that's actually really helpful.
Well, the thing that I actually really love, and this is less comments, more so like in person, is because, you know, we were joking about this backstage, but like the thing that every black artist gets eventually is like, well, how come you didn't tell my story, you know?
And it's every time. Every time.
You didn't even touch on the Nigerian experience in Atlanta, you know? And just like, you know, furious about it. It's true, though. It's true. I love y'all. Some of y'all in the audience right now thinking,
I wrote that. That's
true. He didn't touch on the slave trade back in... No, but, like, the thing is that that actually is very helpful for me because, you know, for instance, like, I've made no bones about the fact that I really want to see Dear White People on television. And the thing that I think is great about, like, episodic, you know, storytelling is that you do get 13 hours to get into stories as opposed to, like, 1.5. So I actually love that because I do get a sense of what people want to see more of because I do, you know, listen, I think that if I had grown up and I had seen something like me in the culture, it would have made me feel like I had a place in this country. It would have made me feel like I had a place in this culture. So, like, for me, like, that is... I do want to tell more of our stories, right. You know, and so that piece of it, like, I'm absolutely on board for, like, constructive criticism.
Yeah, constructive. That's you the know, operating word.
I'm all about that, for sure.
So we should open it up to the audience, that's cool.
Hi, I'm Tazima, and I actually talk a lot about sex and relationships and women who are struggling with sex and relationships. And recently I was writing something about my experience as a Black woman in dealing with what happened to be a white lover at the time. And my question to you is, like, I know that I love the part with White Jay and Black Jay and that whole... So, like, I love that part of the series. And I wanted to know... In your experience, were there challenges with presenting that content, and what came up for you, and are you planning to do more of that conversation about race and the layer of race on sexuality?
I know you can definitely speak to this because you've already spoken to that. But yeah, I mean, that came about because I wanted to address and throw sort of negative interracial dating stereotypes on its head. You know, I wanted to discuss that in a way that was funny and that wasn't too preachy. And I felt like I definitely got a lot of flack, like, especially at the end. I just went to a college where people were like, so I still don't forgive you for not choosing Black Jay. And I was like, first of all, that's not his name, so you didn't even know. His name was Fred.
Black Jay.
Saw a black face and you were like, they need to be together. But I definitely got a lot of that. And I think that's just a ton of time. Yeah, I got a lot of that. I know you got a lot of it.
Girl,
without giving away your movie.
You don't know.
But do I feel the need to address it every single time? No, because I feel like right now we are in a trend where there are a lot of, you know, black women and white men on television. So I kind of feel like that conversation is constantly happening, that debate, that discussion is already out there. Will I explore it again? Absolutely. But I'll try to find different ways to explore it.
Do you think that, like, the fact that there is so many interracial, like, relationships on television, do you think that's actually exacerbating people feeling some type of way about it? Because I'll tell you this, I actually was, you know, there's an interracial relationship in my movie. She also chooses White Bay at the end. But I got a lot of, like, you know, I feel like you're disrespecting the black woman, and what are you saying about black men? And they forget about, like, the two black people that actually hooked up in the movie. They forget about, like, you know, but I understand it, because what they're feeling like is that their story, again, is just not out there in the culture. But again, I think that's an unfair burden to put on every piece of art from a black artist, that this has to tell everybody's story.
It's true.
Because a white artist... Honestly, like, white artists don't have that pressure. You don't leave Hunger Games, like, feeling like, you know, this didn't properly explore my experience as a white woman in America. You know, you just don't.
It's very, very true.
But I think that, like, you know what? I think, like, that's the America we live in. And I feel like, for me, like, I did it because, like, I thought that was an interesting thing to talk about. As a woman who built her identity on being, you know, so Afrocentric, and she fell in love with a white guy, like, what do you do in that situation?
And I also don't think it's fair, because we see tons of movies and black protagonists with, black male protagonists with, you know, non-black female protagonists, and it's not always up for debate. And so, I mean, it's happening right now. My views are conflicted either way, but I agree with you completely in that the burden and the onus shouldn't be on one person and one particular filmmaker. And, you know, if it can be accepted in white culture, in American culture, that where white is the default, then that's fine. But I don't know. It's just, it's not that big of an issue to me, and it's not that big of a deal.
And I say, if you, again, like, if you're feeling some type of way because you don't think black love is in the culture enough, put it in the culture.
Put it in the culture.
Put it out there. Let me see that story. I'd love to see it. Beyond the Lights did it. You know what I mean? Like, and I feel like a storyteller is supposed to have...
People still had an issue with that, too.
What?
She's light-skinned.
She was light-skinned. Oh, hell! Oh,
so
Gina.
You can't win.
You can't win for losing. Damn.
Okay. There's another question over here on your
sorry.
Right. My question is about the entertainment industry. It seems like there's a lot of moral conflict that people go through, and they feel really lonely, and a lot of people end up dealing with that internally, and I just want to know what either of you have dealt with, or what moral qualms you've dealt with. If you haven't, which I can't imagine you haven't. If you haven't, just talk about what your fears are.
Wow.
Wow.
What moral... I don't like to place myself in positions where I have to, like, question, you know, who I am and my values at the end of the day. Thankfully, I haven't really been in those. I quickly exit if I ever feel uncomfortable. That's just not a position I want to be in. I'm having a lot of fun doing what I do, and I hope to continue having fun. The only issues I've ever had are, you know, just with toxic people ultimately at the end of the day, and that's just been a lesson in keeping firm, standing ground with my vision and making sure not to become infected in a way. But otherwise, no, I don't have the tea for you on that as much. And I'm glad I don't, because that depressed me.
I do. I do. I've slept with a lot of people. I'll talk to that. Look, I'm not trying to get too crazy, but I just feel I have to say it because, you know, a friend from high school just, you know, died of an overdose. Harris Whittles, who is a writer on Parks and Rec. And one of the things the reason I bring that up is because, like, I mean, I don't have a drug problem, but at the same time, like, I understand what he was struggling with, because it's so confusing when you start walking in your path, you start following your dream, and you're not, like, walking on air all the time. You're not, like, immediately, like, satisfied and fulfilled and happy, like, just because you're following your bliss, you know what I mean? And it's important to know, it's just important to know that going in, because I think a lot of people end up chasing something after that first piece of success doesn't totally satisfy them, and then they start chasing success and fame and all this stuff, and trying to, like, fill themselves up with these other things, and it can be very confusing, you know? Like, I really do feel like I was put on this earth to be a storyteller, but that's my job, do you know what I'm saying? And my job is not always fun. My job doesn't always fill me all the way up, you know what I mean? It's not always sustaining, but it's what I'm here to do, and I love it, and it's great, but it's not everything. Mm-hmm. It's not my everything, and I just, you know what? I think I need to say that, because we live in a culture that's very ambitious. We live in a culture that tells you that if you find your purpose and you follow your purpose, that all of your wishes will come true. And that's not exactly the case. You still have to build a life of integrity, put people in your life that you love, completely, and teach you how to love better. And recognize that in the world of entertainment, or, you know, in the world of artistry and all this stuff, like, you're actually giving to people. Like, that's really what you're doing. So you need to find something that you can give just to yourself too, you know, and make sure that you have some kind of balance there. And for different people, that's different things. But I don't know, I felt the need to say that because, you know, Harris was my homie, and I haven't talked to him in a while, and I'm a little devastated by it. And I don't know, just take care of yourselves. Yeah.
Bina is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's guests were television actors, writers, and producers Issa Rae and Justin Simeon. The fifth and final season of Issa Rae's Insecure is now available on HBO. And the fourth and final season of Justin Simeon's Dear White People is available on Netflix. The conversation was recorded in 2015 before the debut of either series, and Issa Rae and Justin Simeon were joined by Jordan Abel. I'm David Kwan, editor and producer of the program, and Tina Pamintuan is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Roshanim Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. Thanks for listening.